Hello, Village. You're listening to Heal, Grow, Thrive, the podcast hosted by Forward Promise. If you don't know us, we're social change advocates focused on reclaiming the humanity of boys and young men of color and supporting the villages that nurture them. In our podcast, we'll talk with direct service practitioners, young people, researchers, and leaders in philanthropy, offering a deeper understanding of both the issues facing boys and young men of color and quality solutions for their healing, growing, and thriving. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to an important episode in our series, highlighting the voices of our grantees, fellows, and other stakeholders, and how they are pivoting their work in the face of this COVID-19 outbreak. We work with some phenomenal people who are fully committed to ensuring that boys and young men of color and their villages successfully emerge on the other side of this. This pandemic is exposing the disproportionate struggle faced by communities of color that is and always has been rooted in a history of dehumanization, racism, and colonization. These factors make boys and young men of color and their villages more vulnerable to illness, violence, and financial ruin. So we're dedicating these first episodes to sharing the issues and the solutions they've developed. We invite you to be thinking about, sharing, and doing what you can to ensure that boys and young men of color heal, grow, and thrive, both during this crisis and beyond. So welcome, everyone, to another episode of Heal, Grow, Thrive, the podcast of Forward Promise. I'm really excited today that we are going to be spending time talking to two amazing people in the work, championing the work in the South. We're talking today with Tamika Mosley, the director of Grantmakers for Southern Progress, an organization that seeks to engage Southern-based and national funders on the importance of supporting and achieving equity-focused structural change in the South. They work to build strong relationships and community with these funders, as well as to strengthen and support the capacity of funders to best engage in conscientious, relational, and strategic grant making. I'm also joined today with my brother in the work, Nathaniel Smith, founder and chief equity officer of the Partnership for Southern Equity. PSE is an organization that advances policies and institutional actions that promote racial equity and shared prosperity for all in the growth of metropolitan Atlanta and the American South. So welcome to both of you. Thank you for joining me today.
It's great to be here.
I'm glad to be here.
Great to be here. Great to be here.
Yes. So I reached out to y'all initially because I read the piece that you wrote, The South Has Something to Say, COVID-19 and Our Chance for Transformation. And I was sitting in my office just like, yes, y'all better say it. Y'all better do it, you know, because I'm always so excited whenever I get a chance to hear from you all as the thought leaders that are really pushing for change in a meaningful way in the South. But now we're finding that in addition to COVID-19, we're also sitting in this space of dealing with the additional racial trauma of our people being murdered in the streets on top of what's happening with COVID-19. And we're seeing that, you know, both are having deep and meaningful impact all over America, but specifically and particularly in the South. And so I wanted to start, before we get into the work, to really just ask each of you, how are you doing and how are you feeling in this moment? So I'm gonna start with you, Tamika.
You know, it's a wave. You know, some days it's really hard because this is hitting from every side of my life, you know, from the work I'm doing with community and the partners in the field to even my family and my mother, who called me crying after she saw that video and having to console her as a mother. But then there are days when I sit back and I pray and I thank God that we're in the position to fight and to push back against these systems. And it gives me the motivation to keep going because I know we have to create a better space for our children to grow up in and to continue to fight for whatever it is they have to do in their journey. And so I'm feeling okay, but I will say it is a wave. It has its ebbs and its flows.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm the same way. For me, every day is different.
And some days I wake up feeling empowered, and some days I'm struggling a little bit. What about you, Nathaniel?
I tell you, I mean, it's been a mixture of emotions throughout this process. You know, when you see another iteration of white supremacy done through violence, I mean, and as people of African descent, we know that racism in its purest form is physical violence. And that's been a part of our existence since we've been here, since 1619. And so for me, it's really strange because, you know, I continuously see this cycle of inhumanity. And it's painful to see it occur in real time, and even more so just how systematic it feels that, you know, it is this focus on one segment of our population and the utilization of systems and structures to get the job done. And, you know, I unfortunately go back a lot of times to the argument that people have about whether the system is broken or whether it's working exactly the way it was designed to work. And I think now more than ever, we're beginning to understand two key things, in my opinion. One is that the system is working exactly the way that it was designed. And that racism is not a byproduct of capitalism or any other system that we're experiencing in America, that those systems were actually created to support racism. Mm-hmm. And I think that we have to be willing to speak and understand that it's been very painful to see it. Like Tamika, some days I've cried, you know, thinking about our children and what they're going through. But it also motivates me because I really believe in my heart that this is our moment. Like, this is the moment that we've all prayed for and prepared for. This is our moment to really move an agenda, and I'm just trying my best to be prepared for that and do my part in moving it forward. So,
yes, yes. Mm. So I'm gonna take us back to the piece that you all wrote on COVID-19. Tamika, talk to me about why you and Nathaniel decided to write that piece. What were you seeing and what was happening in our Southern communities that needed to be lifted up in that moment?
You know, Nathaniel actually called me and we had a real, like, honest conversation about what the narrative that we were hearing and what were coming out. And it was almost like they were trying to position it like this is brand new stuff. And we had to make it clear that the South has been facing these inequities and these racial injustices for decades, and that this is not new. And how we wanted to shine a light on the fact that this stuff was happening and that this is an opportunity for us to begin changing things, but that we wanted to say that, you know, what we're seeing here and what we're experiencing, the disparities that are existing in healthcare and the criminal justice system and the educational system, those things have been perpetuated for decades. And like Nathaniel said, one of the things that people need to understand about racism is that it was a construct. It was intentionally created to enslave people for the benefit of capitalism. And I don't think people understand that portion or that part of history, and that this is not something that was just a something that just happened. And so we continuously wanted to say, listen, let's be real about where we are in the South. Let's be real about what's happening and why it's happening. And let's be real about our process through figuring out how we are going to interrupt and change these systems that are oppressing our people. And I just heard Dr. Barbara, William Barber, say something. And it was an analogy that really, for me, was like, yeah, that's what we've been saying. He said, when you go to the doctor, he said, they give you this contrast dye. And when you drink that contrast dye, it's just illuminating all the issues that have been happening in your body. And that's what the pandemic is doing. It's just illuminating what's already been there. It didn't create it. it was already there, and it just intensified it so that you could see it and you feel it way more than you ever had before. And so that was, for me, why it was important for me to work with Nathaniel, who has been on the ground for years working around these issues, and other grassroots organizations and nonprofits that have been working on trying to change the system for years, and have made great progress, but there's also a great amount of work that we have to continue to do, and how we needed to stand up and push philanthropy, push the philanthropic sector to say, it's time. You have to decide what side of justice you're going to stand on. And here are the tools and the things that we can offer you to help you on that side, to be on the right side of justice.
Absolutely. Because I've been saying to people since this whole pandemic happened, you know, the way that this has played out did not have to be. Mm-hmm. We had been paying attention to the solutions that have been, you know, put forward and lifted up in our communities for years and years and years before this. And if we had implemented those things, the way COVID-19 rolled through our nation didn't have to be, you know? Right. And so
the way it rolled on communities of color,
yes,
the way it rolled on Black people, if the healthcare system before this hit was not supporting and providing adequate health care, what do you think is going to do during the pandemic? Particularly when people could no longer go into those institutions and be advocates for their families while they're sick.
Mm-hmm. So Nathaniel, you all have a broad and far-reaching policy and advocacy agenda at the Partnership for Southern Equity. And a lot of the things that you all are lifting up, like we said, are things that have existed in Southern communities for generations. What do you think are some of the most important solutions that we need to be listening to right now?
So for me, you know, even, you know, in light, Rhonda, of the work that we're doing around policy transformation and really trying our best to really grow and build what we call an ecosystem of leaders and organizations that are working collectively to advance a racial equity agenda. For me, the most important thing right now, and I think we're experiencing it even today, is the thirst and the need for what Dr. King called a values revolution. You know, that we need a revolution of values just as much as we need a revolution of policy. Why do I say that? Because in essence, public policy is a reflection of the values of people in power. And as we continue to move forward in advancing racial equity, we have to understand that the reason why Black people are suffering as a result of COVID-19 in ways that other people are not is because racism is a social determinant, right? People are suffering, Black people are suffering as a result of COVID-19 because of the communities that they live in and how policy has reflected the values of people in power by not allowing them to live their full life or have access to the resources that they need to become fruitful and contributors to our society, right? And so you can't talk about change without also talking about values. And I think we have to be a lot more forthright and a lot more aggressive in fighting those battles of ideas and beliefs and values and really begin to grow and create the infrastructure around what that battle looks like. Why did other segments of the community make a decision to develop and implement a 50-year strategy in the South? Because they, after the passage of the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act, because they knew that that could be the place and has always been the place where the oppression of communities of color and indigenous people have lived and been perfected. And so, you know, the values revolution is the work that I think we have to do. The other key thing that I think we really need to focus on is helping to cultivate and support the agency of individuals and frontline organizations on the ground. Who should be leading this movement for racial justice? The people who've been affected by it the most. But it can't happen unless we're helping to facilitate their own agency in ways that will help them lead and not just be at the table. Because I think a lot of times people don't understand that people in power are always more than happy to allow people to sit at the table, because many of them don't have anything to say, right? We've got to do what we can to ensure that not only they're invited, but they have something to say. So this values revolution, the work around building the agency of frontline organizations and individuals. And this last thing that I really, really think is critical and important is how are we using public dollars and philanthropy as a way to advance racial equity? You know, and you know, I'm not going to talk about the government side today, because I think there are many, many conversations we can have around economic development and the use of public finance to advance racial equity. What I want to talk about is the lack of philanthropy, in particular philanthropy outside of the South, to basically look at the South as invisible and to marginalize a whole region in order to satisfy their own attitudes about certain segments of the population, right? And to make the excuse that nothing will ever change in the South as a reason why they would not support the resilient leaders and organizations that have been fighting not only for the South, but for the nation since 1619. And we have to be willing to own that. Yeah, we can easily talk about the anti-equity interests that have worked to maintain a certain amount of white supremacy in the South. My focus is on the same focus that Dr. King was on, and that is the white moderate, the foundations that who say that they're for our communities, but at the same time are not willing to invest in them or the leaders at the same level that they're investing in other organizations and other leaders. So goes the South, so goes the nation. And there have been a segment of the community that have not acknowledged that and hadn't have embraced that. And because of that, America has suffered.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because we know that our organizations that are run by people of color in our communities are getting less dollars and have more restrictions placed on those dollars. And so they have less flexibility. And what we needed most during this time to address the issues of COVID were general operating dollars that organizations could take and run with, so they could figure out how to best address the problems in real time. In our communities. And I know in the piece that you all wrote, you all had some very concrete suggestions for philanthropy. So Tamika, you want to share some of those with us?
Yeah, it's some of the stuff that Nathaniel already lifted up, like allowing folk in community to lead the way. The folks that are doing the work on the ground are the experts. They are the people that can inform your strategies and inform your grant-making strategies for the field. It, other things, that stuff like you're saying, you're the providing general operating support and to move your program support to general operating. So a lot of foundations have provided grassroots organizations and nonprofits with programmatic dollars. And we're saying take those programmatic dollars and shift them to general operating dollars, because many of the institutions and organizations that they had funded or were funding had to do a major pivot when all of this went down. While we were shutting down, going home, these organizations had to ramp up their work and ramp up how they were able to connect with community and had to do it in a moment's time. So they need the capacity to be able to shift their programming dollars to operating so that they, one, can keep their staff on and continue to pay their staff, so they can hire the additional support that they need, and so that they can continue operating in a way that is aligned with what we saw happening with the pandemic. We're also suggesting that people think about how they're requiring folks to report back, or how they're even drafting their grant applications in the first place. You know, one of the things that GSP has been very vocal about for years now is to find ways where you can streamline your grant application process or collaborate with other institutions so that folks don't have to apply to 5 different funds to do the same work. So things like that were going to be helpful and give people more time to provide that critical infrastructure that's needed on the ground. And to support more. So taking more of the risk on yourself as a foundation and taking that risk off of the groups that are working on the ground. So those are some of the things that we are continuing to reiterate and actually trying to provide, you know, trainings and opportunities for folks to learn how to make those shifts. And also by lifting up those organizations that are doing a good job of that.
And if I may, Tamika, I think that there are two other key things too. I mean, it's important for funders to understand that equity is a way and not a what, right? It's not just about outcomes. It's about what are you doing internally to ensure that you have policies and procedures and you truly reflect the equity that you say that you're trying to fund on the ground and with other organizations. So there's a lot of internal work that is required. And then from my perspective too, and it's in the report, like we've got to start funding organizing again. Like, we've got to start, you know, and we've lost that over the years because the sector has become over-professionalized, in my opinion. But, you know, I think we saw with all of the marches that have happened recently that big money not only should go into organizing, but also to assess whether the organizing styles that we are encouraging people to use are actually effective. I mean, I actually believe that we need to do a deep dive around organizing in the 21st century and what does that really look like, and to take from our ancestors, but at the same time create a new agenda around how we organize. But the investment in organizing and really growing the civic agency of community is critical now, probably more than ever before.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if for philanthropy to really have the shift, I think Nathaniel hit it the nail on the head. Like, institutions, philanthropic institutions have to take a look at their mission, their vision, their values, and start to change those structural infrastructure within their institution. Because if they don't, even if you have an amazing program officer that is moving money on the ground, if that person leaves, then there's no lasting impact within the institution. And we're seeing that happen. We're seeing people leaving philanthropy and all the work that they've done to make sure communities were supported, fizzled and went away. So we have to make sure if you're in philanthropy, and if you're, even if you're not sitting in the position, an executive level position, you have to see yourself as an organizer. You have to see yourself as, how am I going to use my sphere of influence to push this institution to make sure that they're supporting organizing work, or that they're supporting the grassroots organizations that are working on the ground. And that they're talking with their boards, that their executives are talking with their boards about changing the legacy of their institutions and how they're funding so that it can be grounded in racial and gender equity. Mm-hmm. You know, those are the conversations that foundations need to have, because if not, then you're going to remain where you are and you will never see the shift that needs to happen to support the work on the ground.
Yeah, and they have to give themselves some measurable benchmarks for where they're trying to go in this equity work.
Exactly.
And then measure it at every step of the way. You know, from the time you come up with the concept of what you're trying to fund, you should be thinking about, how am I going to measure whether or not I'm doing this with fidelity and I'm infusing equity into the process along the way. And because we know that what gets measured is what matters.
That's right.
And so we have to be focused on that. So we are, you know, 3 months in now on dealing with COVID in our communities. And a lot of our organizations started with doing rapid response work. Mm-hmm. But now are shifting from that rapid response modality to just thinking differently about how they need to function moving forward to continue to be impactful with the people that they serve, but also to continue to be impactful in terms of the organizing they need to do to really shift mm-hmm. policy and practice. So what are you hearing from the organizations about what's most important to them right now? So that if philanthropy was listening and they were thinking about what direction to move with their funding, that they got some insights from this conversation.
So from my perspective, I think what I'm learning from our partners on the ground is that they're being forced to have a dual consciousness around their work. So many of them were focused on power building and engaged in the community. And now they're right on the front lines and have to help people get groceries and pay their light bills. And because of COVID-19 and the economic effects of that on frontline workers, that won't change anytime soon. And so they're trying to really meet the community where they are and understand that you can't organize people with growling stomachs. Like you've got to help people meet their immediate needs. I will say though, in terms of for philanthropy, what we're hearing in the community, and I think we're seeing it, is this clear kind of understanding around the need for a long game as well as the short game. And I think that there are a lot of people now who did not necessarily focus as much on the systems work, the policy work. I mean, some people focused on the power work, but not really around the systems work. And I'm seeing more people on the ground beginning to kind of become systems thinkers and really because they've been forced to and are now asking for resources and money to kind of grow their capacity around being able to speak truth to power and to actually have an analysis around it and solutions that they can take and really organize with other people around this moment. So I really think that a lot of the organizations are really beginning to become more cognizant of the urgency around changing the whole system and really needing support and guidance and funds in order to do that.
Yeah. Some of the things that we've been hearing and seeing and is almost like it was a warning bell. When the pandemic hit, like most foundations in philanthropy do, they shifted and moved money immediately. You had folks that moved a lot of dollars. Part of the problem was a lot of those dollars, again, didn't come to the South. And I'm not to call any institution out, but you had institutions putting millions of dollars into play. But the infrastructure that really needed to be supported and galvanized was movements that were already happening in the South that did not get supported. The other thing that was that's a little scary and that we've been really trying to have real conversations with our partners and the funders that we've been working with is to say, yes, moving the money for the immediate work is necessary. But let's not forget that this is a moment and not a movement, and that you have to think about how you're going to be funding these organizations after the pandemic hits. Because we even had some conversations with folks that said, well, we took money out of these funds to support this. So what happens after that happens? You know, where are folks going to get that long-term support? And the answer was, well, we got to figure that out. So we're asking folks to think critically about how they set up these rapid response funds so that, yes, they're meeting the immediate need, but let's also do some thinking around how we're providing and supporting those long-term strategies that are really going to shift the work in a meaningful way that's really going to have the impact that we're really wanting to see. So those are some of the things that we were really helping folks think about and really hearing from grassroots groups that this is what they were afraid of. Like, we're getting all the support now, but what does this mean for our long-term work and these long-term strategies, mm-hmm. particularly now that all of this movement, all of this mobilization has happened?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how can folks support the efforts that Grantmakers for Southern Progress and Partnership for Southern Equity are moving right now?
You have to show up and you have to be willing to sit at the table and work with grassroots organizations and nonprofits like Partnership for Southern Equity, not to drive, but to be driven, you know, to allow them to drive the strategies that are being created and not to create those strategies in a silo, because that's where you miss the mark. And that's where we go 10 years down the road after you've been funding something, you don't really see any real change because you've done this work in your own silo and not connected to the people that are on the ground doing the work. So there has to be a connecting point where philanthropy is working with grassroots nonprofits that are on the ground moving this work every day. The other part, fund more. Like, how are you funding this work? Like, how are you funding organizing? How are you making sure that the systems change work, this generational work, is being funded? And that is not a short-term. Short-term for me is 10, 15 years. That's short-term work. So we're talking generational work and making sure that the resources are in place to fund structural change work in the South.
Yeah, those are good, Tamika. I mean, I would also push funders outside of the South to actually honor and respect the culture and history of the South by supporting mm-hmm. indigenous organizations before you try to bring in other organizations that are outside of the South. You know, I have a personal issue with funders that are trying to import other organizations that have been successful around these issues in other places without understanding that the South is a very different place. And I've seen many of those organizations crash and burn because foundations don't have the patience and the willingness to provide the resources that are required to actually grow organizations that are more indigenous to the South versus trying to import organizations and talent. And I think, you know, you've got to do more around respecting the resilience of the people that are already here and the organizations that have grown up in spite of their support, not with their support, and to really do what you can to support those organizations and be respectful of the work that they've done.
And the other thing that I want to highlight, you know, particularly for those foundations that are beginning their learning journey around what is racial equity and how is it showing up in my institution and what are the things that we need to be changing, There are foundations that have started this work and are doing a good job of making sure that they're grounded in racial and gender equity. So peer with them. You know, if you don't know who they are, call GSP. And we can share with you who your peers are that are working in this field and that are pushing the limits around how do we make sure that what we're putting out is grounded in racial equity or grounded in equity. And so there are ways. I don't want folks to let themselves off the hook by saying, I don't know how to do that. Or, you know, my board is never going to have that conversation. That's letting yourself off the hook. There are things that you can do. There are resources that are out here with GSP and all the other service like AFSCME, all the other PSOs that are out there that are driving this work. There are ways where you can get the political education that you need to learn how to work within your institutions to start rooting your work in racial and gender equity and to support work that's happening in the South.
And one more thing, Rhonda, if I may, I think it's also really important for the funders to not believe that the change that we're talking about is going to happen in a grant cycle. You know, that if they come, they're going to have to be willing to provide patient capital that will be multi-year in scope and be willing to stay here for the long haul and not just because it's cool to talk about the South now. And it's also going to be really important for them to shake themselves out of this campaign modality as it relates to change, in particular in places like the South. Campaigns are not going to realize the type of changes that we want in communities. Campaigns are moments in time. Political campaigns are just moments in time that can be leveraged to move a further agenda forward. And so the movement building modality is really what is going to be central in funders understanding how their philanthropy needs to show up and not just around a candidate or a referendum or anything, you know, that is more short term. Yes, leverage those opportunities, but those opportunities should be moments that you're preparing for versus just moments that you're investing in and then leaving after those campaigns are done.
Right. Well, listen, y'all, this has been a rich conversation and there are tons of takeaways out of this conversation that people can move on immediately. You know, though, that Forward Promise is focused on healing. And you know mm-hmm. that I love you both. Mm-hmm. And so my final question is, I want to know how you're taking care of yourselves. Because this work is tiresome sometimes. And it's important that you're also focusing on finding moments of peace And so I want to ask you how you're taking care of yourselves, and what would you say to the other folk that are doing this work alongside you in terms of how they should be taking care of themselves?
Well, what I'm doing is making sure that I take adequate time to just disconnect and turn off the television, turn off my phone, and really engage with my family and loving on them and having them love on me. That is my self-care. And checking in with the people that I love and stay and love and want to stay connected to. But I also want to make sure that our folk and community are okay, particularly those folks like Nathaniel. I say to him, and I say to all, you know, the Marys and the Ashleys and the Tamikas of the world, like, listen, make sure you get your rest. Make sure you take it easy, because this work, stress will kill you. And you have to make sure that you're giving yourself the time to take a breath. I have a really good friend, Melanie, who's with the High Fund, and we have these check-in calls, and we started off with breathing and being connected to our breath and just realizing the space that we're in and how we are sitting in those spaces in the moments that we take and the breath that we take with each day. So those are the things that I'm doing, checking in with myself and also checking in with people that I care for in my family and in the work.
I'll tell you, to be transparent, it's really been hard for me to really focus on myself right now with so many people I love suffering and the way things that are unfolding right now. And I, to be completely transparent, kind of immersed myself in the work right now, because, you know, this is a very traumatic time for Black people, right? You see a Black man get hit by a truck and then shot, you know, in Brunswick, Georgia, and you hear about a sister where the police ran in and shot her 70 times, you know, and then you see on film a brother who was choked to death by a man's knee. These are very traumatic times, and it can be depressing times as well. And, you know, the one thing that gets me through this is just my deep faith in God, you know, and really trying to always find the time to talk to God and to really meditate and really kind of think about what is the big plan, even though we will never know what the big plan is. But it's been really hard to balance it all out because of where the newness of where everything is right now. And also this realization, you know, that this is the moment, you know, this is a very unique time. And if we don't push at this moment, there's a real chance that we definitely won't go back to the way things are, but, you know, we're dealing with interests that will use this moment as an opportunity to make things worse versus better. And so I don't have, I'm not sure yet. I was actually doing pretty good, I would say, before all of this happened. But I'm trying to get back to balance. But I'm doing a lot of praying right now, to be honest with you.
I hear you. We're going to put some accountability partners around you, Nathaniel.
Yeah.
To make sure you're taking care of yourself, because we need you in the work for the long game. So we need you taking care of yourself. And I'm saying that just in love.
No, I appreciate it. I mean, you know, it's something that I'm definitely aware of and am trying to get to that point of what you're saying. And hopefully I'll be able to get back there soon, you know.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, I want to thank you both, Tamika and Nathaniel, for sharing some time with us today and sharing your deep knowledge, and mostly to thank you for your commitment to the South and all of our people there, because without you, we wouldn't be able to advance this movement in the ways that we are.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Ron. I appreciate you creating this platform so that we can share and reach out to our people. And I don't want you to I want you to clearly understand how important this is and how important the work that Ford Promise is doing to all of us, to the nation.
That's right.
So we're extremely appreciative of your leadership. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Heal, Grow, Thrive, the podcast. We hope these conversations prompt a deeper commitment to action in the field and in philanthropy to create a society that is fair and equitable for all. For more information about Forward Promise, visit forwardpromise.org or follow us on social media. We're simply Forward Promise on Facebook and @forward_promise on Twitter and Instagram.